It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Welcome to Winging It in Motown Radio. I'm your host, Jeff Hancock. Joining me today, Lauren, JJ, Kyle. How you doing?
Greatest day ever.
Great. Thumbs up. Hockey. Wings. Last Thursday, they win to wrap up a nice West Coast road trip. Sunday, they lose. That sucked. What did you guys think overall of the week? JJ, you were at the game on Sunday. Go.
I thought the Sunday game was honestly quite boring. Like, it was enjoyable to be at the Joe, because you can't, like, not enjoy a game. It's just that, like, the whole arena just kept waiting for good shit to happen, and the Red Wings actually played a pretty good game, but they just couldn't hit the net. They couldn't score more than one from Mrazek. Really, the only excitement that really came outside of the goal itself and the late game dumb shit heroics by Brendan Smith were, like, every time Larkin was carrying the puck up ice, like, you could feel, like, the anticipation and the energy in the arena for that kid, and that was a lot of fun to experience firsthand. Other than that, yeah, the game was boring. Red Wings need to figure that shit out, but they got the processes right, at least. That's good, because after the road trip, they won a lot of games basically on the magic of Mrazek. So if they're going to lose a shootout because they got the process right and just shit didn't go right for them, I'm all right with that.
Yeah, the game last night was boring. But at the same time, it was like one of those moral victories, just because they played really well, I thought. It's just they can't freaking score. And even though their power play looked good, they need to score. They need to score on the power play, especially when you open up with a freaking 5-minute, game misconduct by Ryan White, diving into Thomas Yurko's head, which he did not receive any discipline for. They didn't practice today, so hopefully Yurko is okay, even though he did return to the game. But still, I don't really trust that. But yeah, the game.
One of our commenters said he was at the Toast of Hockey Town. He didn't look any worse for wear, so that's okay. Good.
Yeah, that is good. Maybe that was because he was drunk. Who knows? Then the game against Arizona, it was just a Peter Mrazek game stealer, kind of like magic comeback, obviously. So, I don't know. I don't know what to make of the team right now. I think that they're still a ways off, and they need to make some key adjustments. You heard?
Lauren?
Let's see. Phoenix, well, I had the recap for that one. That one kind of, I thought it kind of started off boring too. I think it was, the first we didn't score, so it just didn't seem like there was a ton going on. I'm sure part of that was because we were on the sixth game of a long road trip and, probably anxious to get back home despite, how much, they talk about team bonding and stuff while they're on those long trips. I'm sure they like to get back home after those. And then, I don't know, it was just kind of a weird feeling throughout that game. We were obviously down 2-0 at the start of the third, and I couldn't get a handle on it, and I was like, well, this game doesn't necessarily feel over, but it doesn't feel like, we're definitely coming back. And then it got down to the, 10-minute mark, and we still hadn't scored, and I was like, I really don't think this is gonna happen. But then obviously we won that one, so that was nice. Just kind of goofy with the couple weird goals that we had in that game. The one that we thought maybe could have been challenged, and then the one that was challenged, just kind of all that was, it was just kind of discombobulated and disjointed to watch through all of that. And then the Flyers game really was kind of much of the same, kind of boring, not obviously not a lot of goals scored. And Kyle, you mentioned the moral victory, I guess in terms of, like, you know, our numbers looked pretty good and, you know, we were able to get a point out of it. But when I, kind of when I think of, like, moral victories, like, I think if we had scored at least once on that 5-minute major, I'd be thinking more about, like, the moral victory. Cause it, like, that to me is like what first comes to mind, when I think of that. But that was just super frustrating to watch. I mean, I walked into the room with where the game was on, and I was like, why are we on a 5-minute power play? Because I completely missed the hit and everything. So I was like, what is going on here? What in the world did I miss in the first, like, 2 minutes of this game? Yeah, that was just super frustrating. I know the Flyers, like, power play was just crap, but I just, like, when they had all those power play opportunities late in the third, I was like, oh, this is going to be it. Like, they're going to score and we're going to lose, and we should have scored on that major back in the first. And, I mean, thankfully that didn't happen, but it was still just,
yeah,
I don't know. It was a shootout loss, and those are never fun. They're always just kind of frustrating. And it was like, I felt bad cause it was Mrazek.
Anyways, I mean, it's but, Mrazek, you know, but I mean, he played well either way.
So. I do agree that it kind of takes away from the concept of moral victory if you get that 5-minute power play and you fail to score on that, because that is very demoralizing. It's, if our power play is going to be our enforcer and try to keep people from doing that shit, then yeah, you can't. The Red Wings had 9 minutes of power play time and got 7 power play shots on net, and that's not good enough. Philadelphia, obviously, they had a minute 46 of 5-on-3, so. But ultimately, they had 6:27 of power play time, 13 shots on net. So,
yeah,
I mean, if neither power play scored, but if I could only pick one of those, I would take the power play that puts 2 shots on net per minute than the one that doesn't.
Right.
I agree. What are your thoughts on the reasoning why this team can't score? Power play, even strength, either or. I mean, you saw Teemu Polkinen come back. They obviously still didn't score a power play goal. Just what's the process, or what part of it are they not getting right? Is there anything other than just literally putting the puck in the back of the net? Is there just bad luck?
I mean, luck can have a lot to do with it. I don't know if they're just, like, I think they've got kind of shitty shot selection at times. It's just, there's so many block shots, a lot of work around the perimeter. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, on the power play, specifically, Pukinen came back, but he was not put in a shooter's position. He kept playing low. Like, the few times he got cocked up to where he could blast a one-timer, basically the Red Wings weren't in a position to make a direct pass to him. Yeah, whether 5-on-5, they play around the perimeter a lot. They hold onto the puck too long, too, and I think that's what keeps getting their shots blocked, is that, like, none of them ever snap the puck off immediately. It's always that one little hole looking for the hole, and that's what gets it into shin pads, or that's what pops it off the post, or that's what misses just wide. Just shoot it more. They don't follow their pucks up a lot more, so they don't get as many second opportunity chances as other teams do. Let's see, I kind of already said they missed the net a lot, but it can't be said enough. They missed the fucking net too much. It's just, yeah, Justin Abdicator is not very good at screening the goalie. I mean, he'll go through stretches where he'll do it, you know, 2 or 3 times in a game, and it's like, wow, that's an amazing screen. And then you'll see for 2 weeks after that, he'll be standing in front of the goalie, and the goalie either has a perfect line of sight for it, or Justin Abdicator is standing in the spot that should be open where the goalie isn't covering, and basically he ends up blocking it for the other team. So they got to get better at basically everything.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the power play is, that's one of my biggest complaints, is the way they work in front of the net, and they don't work in front of the net. So, that's a big thing. Because you think if this team had even like a middle pack power play, like, or even like a top 10 power play, you probably have about 5 more wins right now. So maybe more, maybe less. I don't know. But, mm-hmm. you know, those count. Those goals, power play goals, yeah. they count. They should score them.
Well, I think
yeah, that's the thing. We honestly wouldn't be talking about this team being mediocre and not really close to being a contender if the power play is really good. If the power play is good, then our goal differential is at least positive.
Yeah.
It may not be fantastic, but right now it's at minus five. So, yeah, a good power play at least knocks it up to even, and it takes away from a lot of the one-goal game because that's not a hint of a good team either. Like, you can win a lot of good goal, a lot of one-goal games, and you can look have a real good-looking record. But over and over, it shows the teams that dominate on the scoreboard are the ones that are honestly better than the ones who, you know how to squeak out those tough-fought victories. And it sounds like, yeah, you gotta find the way to get that one goal, and that's how you win in the playoffs, and that's not fucking true.
You score as many goals as you possibly can.
I'd rather lose every game we lose by five goals as long as we kept winning by more than one.
I think you're crazy for saying that.
Well, I think I even said on Twitter during the game, you know, if we had last year's power play on that 5-minute major, we probably score
twice
at least. Yeah. You know, and I was just sitting there watching the clock wind down on it, and I was like, oh, can it please be last year just for the power play alone?
Yeah.
And we've heard a lot about the
wishful thinking.
The system of the power play and how Prashant has talked about it a lot, where they're too static. They play on the half boards. They play on the wrong half board, too.
Yeah,
they always play from the right wall instead of the left.
Yeah.
Really hate how the points don't collapse often enough. They're just not creating enough shots, and I think that a lot of times they are wasting one of their extra players on a net front job that they're just not very good at, and I would just
rather
do that. So I guess it's the same story as when we recorded last week. Fire Frischweiler. I'm kind of
dumb. Yeah, I know somebody had mentioned that in the comments, and I think that it's not going to happen, but it probably should, or he should be put into a different role and have somebody else run the power play because it's just not working out. Jeff, what about you?
What about me?
Yeah,
I want to talk about the defense is what I want to do. Because the last time we chatted, they rolled seven defensemen. Mm-hmm. Since then, Alexei Marchenko has been the odd man out, and he's had some time sitting in the Leno lounge. I know, obviously, that's not our preference on who plays and who sits, but just your takeaway on how the defense has looked with the six guys they've rolled, with Quincy getting a few more games under his belt, and just other than that obvious change we would love to make, what would you do with the defense?
I'll take the lead here. I think Quincy hasn't made an impact at all, and I didn't expect him to, really. He looks very much like what he always has been, just kind of like a one-dimensional, obsolete sort of defenseman. He makes good plays every now and then, but not a game changer. I would definitely rather have Marchenko in lineup over Quincy or Erickson, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think we could see Quincy be a healthy scratch at some point. I think that's not too crazy to think. But yeah, it's just like and the rapid, like, we know it's been coming for a long time, but the rapid and obvious regression of Cronwall has been so detrimental to the team. I mean, I don't even want him on the power play. I don't even want him playing 20 minutes. Like, it's just, it's bad. So I don't know. Something needs to change there, and they're not going to be able to make a trade to change that because they would have to dump salary. So yeah. I think that Marchenko, you know, before Quincy came back, was one of the best defensemen we had in terms of just, you know, two-way play. And I think they need to remember, oh, hey, he's actually kind of good.
Yeah, I'm real confused by the Marchenko situation because Jeff Blashill has talked over and over about how Marchenko didn't play himself out of the lineup. He'll be spending a lot of time with us real soon. And he's just, like, real cagey with it. And then the Red Wings, you know, they practice on a game day, and Marchenko isn't there for practice at all.
Yeah.
You know, and then the Diggers actually dug on that because we asked him about it, and Con asked Blashill, and he said, well, he's not hurt and he's not sick. It's just a personal day. Yeah. And then Bob Duff writes out that not only was it, you know, a personal day, but curiously, like, his equipment wasn't even in his locker, which I don't know why that would be, because this was on Sunday, so mm-hmm. their next game is at home too. So there's no reason for Marchenko's equipment not being in the locker. It's like it feels like there is a trade idea coming. I just don't know if they're seriously considering trading Marchenko, which I'm against on the sole. Like, I'm not against trading Marchenko. I'm against trading Marchenko on the concept of I don't think that there's basically much value for him around the league. And no, I think that Ken Holland is going to get ripped off if he trades him. He's not going to get a guy that I'm going to be happy with that trade 3 years down the line. Because I really think that Marchenko has the capability of breaking out and becoming easily a top four defenseman, like an unquestionable top four defenseman for an NHL team in the next couple of years.
What day was this? It was Sunday. Could his they've just not unpacked it from the road trip yet, and he was gone, and he'd been gone since they got back? Maybe someone's ill in his family or something.
Yeah, that would work. Yeah, because I mean, the more favorable concept of like the trade winds are blowing is that they're trying to show. Ken Holland has told Blashill, you got to play Quincy, and you got to play him in situations he's going to look good because I want to trade him, make it happen. It wouldn't be the first time that I'm pretty sure that Ken Holland has been showcasing a guy. He's never traded a guy after showcasing him, if that's the case. But, hey, maybe this year would be different. You know, this is the year of this. If it's all different now, things work differently. So, yeah, let's do that. Kyle Quincy is getting traded for just draft picks. That's one draft pick. It'll be a second rounder. And then people will be furious about that.
I wouldn't be.
I mean, either.
Yeah, I think that would be a great deal. And everybody wants to speculate trades right now, but I keep on saying it. I'll keep on saying it. Not happening unless somebody gets hurt, somebody with a bigger cap hit, or they dump someone like a Quincy or a Helm. But it would have to be Quincy because it has to be a considerable amount.
Just keep saying it. I like our team. I like our team.
I don't know. As long as Holland kicks some tires, we're all good, right?
Right. Yeah.
Maybe I'd like, you know, let's just hope that Blashill is getting cagey because he wants to sit Erickson, but he can't because maybe Ken Holland won't let him or something stupid like that.
Well, if that's the case, then Ken Holland is bad because he doesn't need to be micromanaging like that.
We should.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk in our comments about, you know, a good coach wouldn't take shit like that from his general manager in regards to Quincy playing over Marchenko. Which I disagree with because he's a first-year coach. Of course, he's going to say okay. But yeah, if it's a case where Blashill doesn't want Erickson in and Ken Holland is forcing that to happen, then I think Blashill could easily go to the press and say, "I would love to bench Erickson, and I'm not allowed to." And the entire city of Detroit would burn down Ken Holland's office.
Well, on the Quincy theory you have about him playing to showcase, I mean, maybe in Blashill's head too, he agrees to go along with something like that because, A, it's a short-term thing. So he bites the bullet now, and then eventually he gets his guy in full-time, which is Marchenko. Mm-hmm. So short-term loss for long-term gain.
I'm wondering too, I know we talked about this not last week, but I think the week before, Marchenko's waiver eligibility is coming up. So this is just kind of another theory that
that's a good call.
Maybe because his equipment wasn't there, this is kind of my guess on it. They've told him, hey, you're going to be swapped out for, I don't know, Ouellette or Jensen or someone, head back to Grand Rapids now. We're not going to announce it until whenever, you know, we've got a couple days off between games and then, you know, they'll make the switch. That's off of absolutely zero information other than that he took a personal day and his equipment wasn't there. But it's just a guess that that's something else it could be. But
I think that's a good observation.
Never know.
Yeah, and one thing that it would totally make sense to delay the waiver eligibility until after the deadline for, and I don't know what this deadline is, so hopefully somebody in the comments can. Somebody who's listening can go look it up and point it out to me. Essentially, if you've got a guy that can get onto the Grand Rapids roster before, I think, the NHL trade deadline, then he'll be eligible to play for Grand Rapids in the playoffs, even if he hits his waiver eligibility. So they may be trying to time that with Marchenko to slow it down so that they can essentially hedge and say, listen, we want Marchenko with the team, But if things go tits up and we end up out in the first round again, we'd like to be able to send Marchenko to have him eligible to play for Grand Rapids.
How does that work, though? If he'd have to go through waivers, I mean, I should probably know that.
I think it, and like I said, I don't know. So I could be totally out of left field on this. But I think it's a case of basically if the Red Wings are eliminated and he's eligible, I think it's possible that you might be able to send him down. I don't know if that's the case, though.
Okay. Well, one thing that is a case is that the Red Wings did make a trade, a very minor deal, and correct me if I'm saying his last name wrong, Richard Nadamel.
I think it's Needhamlow.
Needhamlow?
Yeah, I've always said it, Needhamlow.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
Who the fuck cares, because he's not here anymore. Yeah. Traded for future considerations, which basically means, like, peace out. We just don't want you anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be a confusing thing. Like, people aren't sure of what future considerations are. Like, does it actually have to be something?
You know, I mean, it's usually like, oh, if he plays 3 games with his new team, then you get a 7th round draft pick or something.
Oh, no, that's a contingent trade.
It could be something like that. Whatever, fuck off, man. Who gives a shit? We're not getting anything back, and he was never going to be a Red Wing. So
yeah, future considerations are basically, I promise to be nice to you in the lunchroom when all the GMs get together. That's essentially what it is. It's, I scratched your back here, so maybe you owe me a favor, but there's no, like, Ken Holland doesn't hold any cards over St. Louis right now as far as, well, we traded you Needhamlow, so now you've got to do this. No, future considerations is basically nothing.
So we can't just get Shattenkirk next week is what you're saying.
Correct.
Good.
Obviously,
we're going to get Tarasenko, obviously. Tarasenko for Needhamlow.
I'm not going to ask you to break down this guy's game because who cares, but yeah. Is this just a move to clear a contract off of the 50 limit in case they do make a move before the deadline?
Not really. I mean, they had room either way. So they were at 47 when they had him. Now they're at 46. Needhamlow was just a guy. He couldn't even crack the Grand Rapids Griffins roster. So I think it was kind of like all right, out of mutual respect, we'll get you somewhere. We'll get you with a team who could possibly, you know, stick you in the AHL and you can get some better playing time. I think that's pretty much what it is. I think they just were like, all right, dude, do you want to, like, just, I don't know, maybe Needhamlow, I don't know if he has an agent, I'm sure he does, just went to him and was just like, hey, this kind of sucks, can I just go somewhere?
Yeah, that's my understanding, is that he specifically asked for an opportunity somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, things are changing where, you know, more people are going to be getting time in the NHL if they've ever played in the ECHL. But still, for the most part, if a guy gets sent to the ECHL at any point of his career, he's not going to amount to much. So, could be totally wrong with him, but apparently this was a case where the Chicago Wolves had some injury problems on their blue line. They were looking for a guy, and he was a guy who wasn't in Detroit's long-term plans anymore. So it's like, well, okay, you can have
him. Yeah, pretty much.
I want to switch gears a little more broad around the NHL. I'm going to kind of throw a few things at you guys. You guys can take it and run with it, or if you got something else you'd like to bring up, that's cool. I mean, we've got Montreal free-falling down the standings. They're now the second wild card, looking at 50 points is the time we're taping. 1 point from being out of the playoffs. John Scott and the whole All-Star game shenanigans. I mean, you still drew in speculation. I read that Montreal was actually interested in him the other day. It's all on the table. The door is open for discussion, whatever around the league you guys want.
I'll just touch on the Montreal thing real quick, and that's the Drouin thing. I don't think that's a good idea for Montreal, because I think that they're going to end up giving up, because Yzerman states that, you know, Yzerman has the upper hand there, obviously. He's going to get good value out of him, and trading him to a division rival, Tampa is moving up in the standings. I mean, they're right behind Detroit. I think they're 2 points back now.
Yep. Same games played.
Yep. So he would essentially be, you know, because if he trades Drouin and, you know, Montreal gets Price back, then that's a big issue for Yzerman, because obviously that team is still really good. So I think that that's going to have to end up costing them like a good NHL player. And, you know, a prospect and a pick. And I think that would be an awful look for Bergevin, I think. And then he would be trading to a team that already has a coach who is just awful with younger players and can't, I don't know, he's just bad at that. So I think it's just that that's a mess. But I hope that they do it, because then Montreal would kind of lose a good player like Nathan Beaulieu or whatever, however the hell you say it.
And in terms of how they stand, it's Yzerman's got all the power. It's like, you make a panic trade or I'm not going to trade Drouin to you at all.
Yep, exactly.
Because it's not like he has to. He's got Drew in his cost control. What?
JJ, I know you wanted to talk about the John Scott thing.
I do want to talk about the John Scott thing, because I'm going to come out and say, in all honesty, that I am that NHL fan that does honestly get excited and does like to watch the All-Star game. I know. Everybody's like, you're too cool for it. It's boring. It's an exhibition. They're not playing real hockey, blah, blah, blah. Whatever. I don't care. It's always been fun for me. And I thought that the John Scott thing was fun. I thought it was nice and subversive. Like, I know, like, all, you know, we made a joke out of him and whatever, but hockey fans aren't dumb. We know that the NHL has been selling us a product in one hand and, and telling us about it in the other hand for a long time. And this is our way of telling them, like, listen, we know what the hell you're about. We know what the hell you're doing. We're going to send John Scott there. And honestly, I'd like to see him play in the All-Star game, because John Scott is a very good hockey player. He's not a very good NHL hockey player, but if you think you can play drop-in against John Scott and ever touch the puck, you're not right. You're not right in the damn head. Watching John Scott get skated around by the absolute best players in the entire league would be fun to watch. And that's what I was all sold on that. He was, you know, originally a little bit embarrassed, and then he was like, no, I'm going to do this for the fans. And then they freaking orchestrate a trade to get rid of him so that they can bury him in the AHL. And apparently that disqualifies him from the All-Star game, which I think is bullshit anyway. If the guy gets voted in to the All-Star game, then he should play regardless of whether or not his NHL team wants him on their roster. I don't think that necessarily he has to be on the NHL roster to go there, because the whole NHL's on a break anyway. But it's just the dumbest fucking thing that could possibly happen. Is that the NHL is going to say, we're going to abide by our own rules, and then they're just going to say, well, we've got these special rules that we're going to abide by too here, and he's not going to go. Now, they say right now it's all up in the air, but I'll tell you honestly, if John Scott does not go to the All-Star game, I'm not watching it. I was going to watch and have fun and enjoy Dylan Larkin at 3-on-3, which I was really excited for, but I promise, if he's not there, I'm not watching it.
I think that's a fair take. It just seems like a whole bunch of shenanigans, bullshit, obviously. I voted for John Scott. I'm sure some of you guys may have voted for John Scott. It was a joke. I wanted to see if he'd actually get in. He won. Cool. And who gives a shit at this point? It's a game that doesn't matter. Like, just let the guy go have fun. It would have been like the highlight of his career, probably. The guy's got, what, 9 points in 11 seasons or something like that? Like,
yeah.
And it would be memorable, see?
Right.
Then you fix shit next year where you still let the fans vote, because you don't take away the fan vote. You just say, here are the 10 people you're allowed to vote on. You're not allowed to write in John Scott. And fans would get over it. They would get used to that. They would enjoy that. You still have the kids get to vote stuff, but the fact that they collude, and here's the thing, is if they colluded at all to get him out of there, which Bob McKenzie, essentially the most trusted reporter in all of hockey, says, I think that there was collusion on this, then yeah, there was. I mean,
yeah.
And the winners of the All-Star game, there's $1 million prize pool for the winning team. They basically colluded to rob John Scott of an opportunity to compete for money. And I would honestly like to see the NHLPA file a grievance. And I think that's why, like, everything is still up in the air, because I honestly think the NHL has been told, you are going to face a grievance if this shit doesn't get made right. And I think that there's a lot of backroom dealing right now, because we've been hearing about that too. Apparently, both the NHL and the Coyotes tried to get John Scott to back out of the All-Star game, and they offered, you know, we'll send your family to Nashville for a vacation anyway, as long as you don't go. And he said, no, the fans voted me in, they want me there, I'm going to go. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's a bunch of phone calls and emails going out right now saying, how do we make this right where John Scott doesn't show up at the All-Star game, but also we don't end up having to fight a grievance and arbitration over the NHLPA rightfully saying, this guy had a damn right to compete and you stole it from him.
Yeah, I think it's a, you know, and you can look at all the other things that are going on with John Scott right now. And, you know, I got into a little argument with someone, I won't name who, on Twitter about, because John Scott has twins on the way, with his wife, obviously, and then this all happens, and it's just like I feel so bad for the guy, which is funny because, you know, if you were to tell me at any point prior to this, you're gonna feel bad for John Scott at some point, I'd probably go, okay, but no, I do. I mean, the guy really got boned, and it is a classic display of the NHL not really caring about what the fans want. I mean, this entire event is for the fans, you know, for the casual fan, it's for the diehard fan, and it's just been kind of turned into a little bit of a farce and whatever. I mean, it sucks. I hope, like you said, JJ, I hope that the NHLPA actually files grievance there and all of that. But yeah, I don't know. I guess you just gotta wait and see. We don't know as of right now, and yeah, I don't know. My guess is that it all gets swept under the rug.
Lauren, you got anything on John Scott?
I mean, I don't really disagree with anything you guys have said. I mean, it just seems like, you know, there's just shady stuff going on, and it's just really shitty too, you know, because like you said, it's supposed to be an event for the fans, you know, this is all supposed to be, you know, for our entertainment, but I think it just kind of goes back to, you know, not only is it just for, it's like an extra thing for the league to profit on, but it also kind of shows like they really don't care all that much about the players that they employ. You know, you see that with league safety things, and it's just like, you know, are they really taking best interests at heart here? And it is this case too, and I get it, you know, trades happen all the time, families get uprooted all the time, but in a case such as this where you have a player that Montreal didn't want, the Coyotes insisted on him going in the trade, and everything that's, you know, the whole situation in under that scope, you know, it's just like, you know, it's just the whole shitty situation, and it's just no one in the league anyway, fans seem to care a big deal about, you know, the personal stuff behind it, but it just seems like the league just does not care one bit, you know, that all of this has happened just so that they can keep their All-Star game the way that they want it. And, you know, they said a while back, even when the voting was still going on, like, oh, we're gonna honor the votes, we're gonna stand by the results and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, they throw a fit, and they already said that they're changing the voting, and they've, you know, already done this whole trade to, you know, get what they want. But I don't know. Just,
well, I can definitely confirm that the NHL doesn't care about the players.
Well, yeah, but it's just another. It's another aspect that you see, and it's frustrating because it's just like any other workplace where, you know, maybe your supervisor or whatever, like, I don't know, I don't want to get into that too much, but it's just, you know, it's just another thing where you just forget, you know, these are people playing, you know, sports that we like to watch, but there are families behind this, there are personal lives affected by this, you know, and the whole thing just makes me mad, and there's nothing that we can do to fix it, you know, and I think that's the most frustrating thing, is that there's nothing that we can do as fans, and there's nothing that, you know, we'd even be able to do, be like, oh, well, we, you know, we'll change this for the future, because, you know, in this case, it's already, what's done is done, and it sucks.
Well, that's what keeps feeling like to me, is that the NHL is basically telling its fans, you are going to like what we tell you to like, and how we tell you to like it, or we're essentially going to say, not fans, we're going to ignore you, or we're going to mess with whatever it takes. Or do you guys like what we tell you you have to like? And it's just so shitty to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, John Scott's All-Star status is up in the air. One person whose All-Star status isn't up in the air, Xavier Ouellette, who is going to the AHL All-Star game representing the Grand Rapids Griffins. And they have a bunch of prospects on their team, and Michelle's going to talk about them right now.
We knew the Griffins couldn't stay red hot forever, and last week they cooled off a little bit, picking up 2 wins, a loss, and an overtime loss. They beat the Charlotte Checkers 5-3 on Tuesday, then lost to the Checkers 4-3 on Wednesday, had an overtime win against Lake Erie Monsters on Friday, and then lost in overtime 4-3 to the Chicago Wolves on Sunday. There were a few roster moves that also impacted the Griffins this last week. The Red Wings traded defenseman Richard Niedermel to the St. Louis Blues in what equates to a nothing move. They got future considerations, which we don't know what they are, but essentially they got rid of a player they knew wasn't going to make it even full-time in the AHL. Jakob Kindle was, of course, put on waivers and sent down to Grand Rapids, and with his addition, Scott Zarnozen was sent back to Toledo. Tom McCullum is still injured, but he was sent to Toledo on a conditioning stint and played a game, and they want to see how his ankle's going to react and how he's going to feel after playing, to see if he's close to returning to the lineup. Dan Cleary, Andreas Athanasiou, Mitch Callahan, Xavier Ouellette, Tristan Grant, Tom McCullum, and Alden Hirschfeld all remain out of the lineup with injuries. Andreas Athanasiou is closest to returning, and the hope is that he may be a possibility on Wednesday night, and hopefully no later than next Friday night. Ouellette is out with a concussion, and while I haven't been able to get a direct answer as to how serious they think it is, it sounds like he could be out for a while. He's not being even talked about as day-to-day at this point, and it sounds like the team is expecting him to be out for what could be a little while. Alden Hirschfeld is still recovering and resting up from the seizure that he had last week on the bench, and it's going to be up to he and his doctors to decide what that means for his hockey career. He says he feels good and he's recovering well. It's just a matter of precautions and figuring out where to go from here. After starting 15 consecutive games, Jared Coro finally got a night off, and Jake Patterson made his AHL debut last Wednesday against the Charlotte Checkers. Unfortunately, it ended in a 4-3 loss, but Patterson made 38 saves on 42 shots and had a fantastic game. In the first 6 minutes, he had to make 6 or 7 really good stops, and he looked just as calm, cool, confident, and quick in the crease as I expected him to. If you like watching the home team score goals, the Griffins' Friday night tilt against the Lake Erie Monsters may have been a little bit boring right up until overtime. There were no goals scored going into OT, and even through the completion of overtime, we thought we were going to a shootout. However, the referees reviewed a shot that Nick Jensen had taken just 2 minutes and 8 seconds into overtime, and after the overtime buzzer went, determined that it was a goal and the Griffins had actually won the game. Initially, it looked like Jensen's shot had hit the crossbar or the post and bounced out to the side of the net. Play continued. There were some people in the stands behind the goal that reacted like it was a goal. Tyler Bertuzzi was right around the net and threw his arms up like it had been a goal, and a couple of the guys on the bench had somewhat of a reaction. Play never stopped, a whistle never went, everything kept on. But what actually happened was Nick Jensen beat Brad Theisen in net and shot the puck through the net. It went through at some odd angle, and I can't even explain how it happened. But after completing the rest of overtime, they did determine the Griffins had won several minutes earlier. That shutout gave Jared Coro his third of the season and helped propel him to the third best goals against average in the league at 2.15, the second best save percentage at .931, and the most wins in the league at 19. Unfortunately, the 4-3 loss on Sunday ended the Griffins' 14-game record home win streak, but it was going to have to end eventually. It was still sad to see it happen, though. Most of the Griffins' big scorers have cooled down in the last couple of games, all of them except Marty Ferk, who continues to put the puck into the net. In his last 17 games, he's amassed 20 points, and in that span, he's only gone 4 games without getting a point. Ferk continues to improve, put up points, and also get better defensively. I'm seeing him many more times come back, be the first forward back checking, and be able to help cover for his team. That's a huge difference from when he first came into the AHL, and even the way he looked at the beginning of this season. He's making huge strides, and it's very exciting to watch. Eric Tangrady has 8 points in his last 8 games. Andy Mealy has 5 points in his last 5 games. And Anthony Mantha, Tomasz Nosek, and Zach Nastasiak have 4 points in their last 5 games, and Bertuzzi has 3 points in his last 6. Even AJ Jenks, who was called up from Toledo as reinforcements for the Griffins, has 3 points in his 4 games since being called up. Tyler Bertuzzi has 3 assists in his last 6 games, but he's a player that I need to see more production from. We've seen it from him before, I know he has it in him, but he's playing on the top line with Andy Mealy and Marty Ferk, and I just am not seeing the production that I'd like to see from him. The last couple of games, he's been playing pretty well, so hopefully the points start coming for him more too. I expected Jakob Kindle to come down from Detroit and be a stud AHL defenseman. I mean, even if he wasn't a great NHL defenseman, coming down to the A should be enough of a difference that he should be able to dominate and be really good at this level. He had a decent first game, and I see flashes where I can clearly tell that he has played in the NHL before. But overall, he's kind of been garbage, and I hate watching him, and he's made some really, really costly turnovers that have led to goals against. And even simple things on the power play, like handling a simple pass when there's no pressure on him, or getting to a loose puck, he'll flub it, end up turning it over, and the other team gets possession. Nick Jensen, on the other hand, I continue to be impressed with. Just the way he plays in all three zones, both ends of the ice, 200-foot player, whatever cliche you want to use, Nick Jensen is good. He's the guy that gets put out in 3-on-3 overtime, on the penalty kill, the top pairing at even strength, and quite frankly, I'd rather have him on the power play than Jakob Kindl. Even though it's obvious there's no room for him on the Red Wings right now, he still continues to make a case by his play that he deserves a chance in the NHL. The Griffins' special teams continue to be an issue, and their power play is terrible. They gave up 2 shorthanded goals against last week and continue to be unable to score on the power play. The Griffins were so incredibly red hot for so long that they had to slow down eventually, and we're starting to get to that point. They're going through more lulls in games where they seem like they're almost bored and other teams take advantage. They back off their pressure, they get a little bit sloppy, and sometimes it looks like they're not fully engaged. And my guess is that's a combination of winning so many games for so long, you can maybe get into some bad habits or be overconfident, and then also all the injuries to the team, and they've got call-ups from Toledo, and they're still missing some key guys. And I think all of those things put together are contributing to not only more losses recently, but just their overall play. They've won a couple of games they were probably lucky to win because they played some bad stretches or maybe even a couple of bad periods, and they were able to pull off a win yet, but that's not something that you want to see them do long term, and it's something that's going to bite them more often than not. That being said, the Griffins still boast a 23-12 1-1 record with 48 points on the season, which puts them at 4th in the Central Division and 5th in the Western Conference. Down in Toledo, the Walleye picked up 2 wins last week, taking a 5-1 win over Evansville on Friday and a 4-3 win over Wheeling on Saturday. Tom McCullum was sent down to the Walleye on a conditioning stint and played on Saturday night and got the 4-3 win. He made 25 saves and allowed 3 goals. Despite being without Merrick Tverton, who was a top scorer on the team, being without Jake Patterson to back up Jeff Lurg, and losing a host of other players to either loans or call-ups, the Walleye continue to win and improve their position in the standings. They currently sit first in the North Division and third in the Eastern Conference with a record of 22-10, 1-3, and 48 points on the season. In other prospects news, Ville Saarijärvi and the Flint Firebirds continue to struggle. In 3 games last week, Ville had 1 goal, 11 shots on goal, and picked up an uncharacteristic 8 penalty minutes. Flint lost all 3 of their games, and they haven't won a game since December 18th. The Flint Firebirds currently sit 9th out of 10 teams in the Western Conference and 17th out of 20 teams in the OHL. In more exciting news, Finland decided to celebrate their World Junior Gold Medal by commemorating it on a postage stamp. That postage stamp features none other than Ville Saarijärvi celebrating on the ice with his teammates after they scored the golden goal. So at 18 years old, Ville Saarijärvi already has his face on a postage stamp. In the QMJHL, Evgeny Svechnikov played in his first 2 games after winning silver at the World Juniors. In those 2 games for the Screaming Eagles, he scored 6 points, 1 goal, and 5 assists. After being a little snake-bitten at the World Juniors and not getting a single point, I'm looking forward to Svechnikov coming back and tearing up the queue. Chevy has 45 points in 29 games, and just to show how ridiculously offensive the queue is, those 45 points in 29 games only put him at 34th in league scoring. It's ridiculous when you start looking at points. The current point leader in the queue is Arizona draft pick Connor Garland, and he has 98 points in 41 games. That's just stupid. Over in the Western Hockey League, Dominic Turgeon continues his point-per-game pace. Picking up 2 more goals last week, he now has 44 points in 44 games. In college hockey news, defenseman James DeHaas had been in a point slump. He only had 1 point in his last 13 games, but last week in 3 games, he picked up 2, notching a goal and an assist in helping his team pick up 2 wins in 3 games. In the KHL, Alexander Kadokin picked up a goal and two more assists in four games last week. He's now up to 10 points in 40 games. Over in Europe, Axel Holmstrom picked up another power play goal in two games last week, and he's still second among junior age players in points in the SHL with 17. Last fall, Montreal Canadiens draft pick Jacob De La Rose did a Swedish interview with Magnus Nyström, and Patrick Bexell over at Habs Eyes on the Prize was kind enough to translate the interview. It was a very long, in-depth interview, but the part that grabbed my attention from a Red Wings perspective was when Jacob talked about Axel Holmstrom. Nyström was asking De La Rose about different players that he'd played with in the World Juniors before, and he asked him, if you were to mention one of them as the guy that will make the biggest statement in the NHL, who would it be? And De La Rose said this, we in Sweden know who he is, but I think before he had the playoffs that he had, and that's Axel Holmstrom. De La Rose said, I think he's fantastic, and I would love to have him on my own team, because he will always give 100%, and he's amazing on both the defensive side and the offensive side of the puck. He's skilled. He might be a bit smaller than me size-wise, but he's still skillful and can also go out and penalty kill, block shots, and he isn't afraid of anything. I think Detroit drafted well. I think it's interesting to hear that coming from a peer, somebody who's played with Holmstrom, somebody who's been in the trenches with him, you know, playing on the national team together, and who knows him. To hear De La Rose heap that praise on Holmstrom, and also single him out, you know, of all the players that he's played with in Sweden, of any players coming out of Sweden that would make the biggest statement in the NHL, De La Rose picked Axel Holmstrom. And I think that's really cool. We also got word last week that goalie Jorin van Puttelbergen has signed a three-year deal with HC Davos in the Swiss League for next year. It's a three-year deal, and he'll then be moving from the Super Elite League in the Swedish ranks over to the Swiss League and playing with the quote-unquote big boys team. I also found out during the World Juniors how to pronounce his name, and I'm trying to do it without butchering it. I sincerely hope that Ray Ferraro hasn't led me wrong with the pronunciation, because that's a mouthful to say. ESPN's Corey Pronman came out with his top 50 prospects last week, and the Red Wings have five names on that list, which is more than any other NHL team has. Pronman ranked Evgeny Svechnikov at number 30, Joe Hicketts at number 34, Axel Holmstrom at 35, Ville Saarijärvi at 40, and Anthony Mantha at 48. There's always going to be discussion and disagreement with where the prospects are ranked, and there's a lot that goes into putting these rankings together. The overarching impression that I take away, though, is that the Red Wings do have five prospects on this list. And you guys had some great questions for this week on Twitter, so let's get right to those. Brad asked if there were any Griffins injury updates, what Hirschfeld's outlook was, and how the Griffins were handling the AHL veteran rule. I pretty much already covered the Griffins injuries and Hirschfeld. As far as the AHL veteran rule, that hasn't been an issue yet, only because there have been so many injuries. The Griffins were going to face issue with the veteran rule once Tristan Grant came back from his injury, but as soon as he came back, Dan Cleary was injured. Jakob Kindle getting sent down will complicate things a little bit more when and if everyone's healthy, but for the time being, the Griffins aren't having to deal with it. Ryan Rab asked, do you think that Marty Furk is an NHL player? He's scoring, but I don't know how his game looks other than that. I'm very excited for what Furk's done this season, and he's at the point where I think there's potential for him to become an NHL player, but I'm really not confident in it. In order for him to make it to the NHL, he's going to have to continue improving, and I'm not sure yet where his ceiling is. I think if he does become an NHL player, he's going to be somewhat of a one-dimensional player. He's not going to be somebody that you put on the penalty kill or rely on in defensive situations, but he would be your trigger man, your shooter, somebody that you would set up on the power play and you would look to score goals. There's also a chance that he could end up being just a really good AHL player. He's kind of in that area where I'm not sure yet if he's going to be good enough, but this is definitely the closest I've ever seen him come to looking like he could make it to the NHL. Sean Carter asked, who do you think is our best defensive prospect? Ouellette, Sproul, Russo, Hicketts? I actually think that of all the defensemen currently in the Red Wings pipeline, Ville Saarijärvi has the highest ceiling. Burr87 asked, where do you see Jensen and Sproul being? Are they impactful NHL defensemen or not? And are the Wings wasting their time, or are they wasting these kids' talents? Nick Jensen, I think, will absolutely be an impactful NHL defenseman. Ryan Sproul, I still don't know if he's ever even going to make it to the NHL. He's at the point where he's, I would say, a mediocre to good AHL defenseman, but that's not going to cut it to make it to the NHL. It's a little bit frustrating for me sometimes that Nick Jensen hasn't got a chance to play in the NHL yet or make his case for the Wings. Are the Wings wasting their time or wasting the kids' talents? I don't think so at all. Adam asked, Who do you expect to see in the Wings lineup next year from Grand Rapids? I think that Xavier Ouellette is the easy answer to that, because we all know he should have been up. I think there's a possibility that we could see some of Nick Jensen. And depending on what happens with the Wings roster, up front, Athanasiou, Noshek, and Mantha are the top three candidates I think the Wings would try out or put in the lineup regularly. But I think realistically, it will be Xavier Ouellette, maybe somebody else, but probably not a huge influx of guys from Grand Rapids. AK Wings fan asked, who could be a surprise prospect to make the Wings? I'm not expecting any surprise prospects to make the Wings, but then again, if I was expecting it, it wouldn't be a surprise. So I'm just going to pull Mitch Callahan's name out. He's somebody that could probably play in the NHL, but I don't expect it, therefore it would be a surprise. App State Nick had a question about Alexander Kadikin and how his current success could impact his development or chances of coming to North America. And I think that the only impacts his success are going to have are positive. I think that he's going to benefit from it, and I don't think that it would make him not want to come to North America. The NHL is the best league in the world, and I think that his success and growth and development will only give him more confidence and better prepare him to come over to North America. Tyler Davis asked, what prospects in the system have the highest upside? For forwards, I think you're talking about Andreas Athanasiou and Anthony Mantha. Defensively, as I mentioned earlier, it might be Ville Saarijärvi. Tacey asked, how do you predict the next couple of years for Evgeny Svechnikov? We already know that he's coming to Grand Rapids next year, which is going to be really good for him to get out of the queue. I expect him to go through many of the same growing pains that Anthony Mantha went through, that Tomas Yurko went through, and that Marty Furk went through. Players coming out of the queue have a lot of things in common. They have to learn a lot of the same things. They have to learn to move their feet, to be engaged, to keep going. It's so easy in the queue to score goals. If you watch any of the QMJHL games, it's almost painful to watch. It's so sloppy and messy and ridiculously offensive. The defense is terrible. And players can basically score at will, doing very little. So you can watch Svechnikov have to do next to nothing and score a bunch of goals. And it's the same thing that Mantha did. Svechnikov is going to go through a lot of the same issues. I think that when he comes to Grand Rapids next year, it's going to be a really rough year for him. I think he'll catch on perhaps a little quicker than Mantha did, and especially if he doesn't have injuries to deal with. Hopefully that won't set him back. But I think his first year is going to be pretty rough and slow, and after his second year in Grand Rapids, I think we'll start to see some of that real potential that we expect to see. Thanks for all the great questions this week, guys. Remember, you can send them to me at any time on Twitter. Until next time, that's what's going on in the world of Red Wings prospects.
All right, thanks, Michelle, for the prospects report. We're going to hand it over to JJ now for our reader questions.
All right, excellent. We've got a lot of comments, but not so many questions. People just wanted to use our mailbag to chat this time around, so that's helpful.
Use Twitter, starting people.
Yeah, that's what Twitter's for. Starting off, IndieWing97 wants to know, the Wings defense looks pretty good against the Flyers last night, but it still seems to be one of the team's weaker points. What can be done to improve the D-core?
Well, I mean, the obvious remedy for that is to look into trade speculation, which, hey, let's go ahead and do it real quick. There are some names out there that could really bolster the blue line. You have your Dustin Byfuglien. He would be a rental. Keith Yandle, another rental. Kevin Shattenkirk is a name that has been tossed out there a few times. And then I don't know if it's real, but Sami Vatanen over in Anaheim, I think that's another name that could possibly be there. Now, I mean, here's the big thing is that like I had touched on earlier in the episode, the Red Wings would need to dump salary cap in order to make this work. So it really makes sense to see a trade with Winnipeg, a team who could potentially take on a salary dump, and then trade a player like Dustin Byfuglien for, essentially a first round pick and then a prospect or something of that nature to kind of round it out. So I don't know. I mean, outside of that, you know, there would need to be a lot of tires being kicked. And I don't know if I feel like that's going to be the case this year. I know that Ken Holland is going to be making calls, but I don't know for sure if it's going to be something that actually ends up happening because, I just don't think Kyle Quincy is going to be a player that a team really wants. a player. Yeah, a player that anybody really wants. I just don't know. But who knows? LA took on Shen, so I guess anything is possible. But yeah, there would need to be a significant salary dump. And if that did happen, then I don't want Bufflin. I want a guy like Shattenkirk. I'd rather spend more for a guy who would be here for at least another year. Vatanen would be great because he's a restricted free agent. He's young. He's cheaper. I think he gets paid like just north of a million and a quarter. Good offensive defenseman, but it's not like a player like Shattenkirk where they are a two-way, you know, a really good two-way player, which is what Detroit needs. So, I don't know. I could see it happening, but all signs are pointing towards no.
You could always go with the hope that either St. Louis or Anaheim would bite on Quincy as, yeah, we know he's a rental, but, you know, he's got that big mean streak that the Western teams tend to like.
Yeah, no, that's true.
I like Shattenkirk. He's got term and he's got more experience. I would braid my own nutsack to get Vatanen. I really like him.
Yeah, he is like as a comparable for people. He's kind of like Ville Sarajärvi is kind of compared to him, kind of like that offensive defenseman. Again, would be a guy that would probably have to play in a sheltered role. It wouldn't be a guy that you could stick in the top pair and really you know, expect to flourish. That's why I'm a little bit meh on it. But I like I said, Shattenkirk is a guy that yeah, I would throw up Mantha and a first round pick for him. Like, I would do that. That's easy. It's going to a Western team. Yeah, why not? So, and then you have the chance of re-signing him, and you know, he's in his 20s, so that's good. I think that's a player that if he is on the block, that is numero uno.
Well, Shattenkirk's got another year. Does he have another year after this one?
Yeah, he is not a rental. He is a free agent in 2017.
Yeah, so that's like not even Mantha in a first gets that done. You're probably looking at moving a roster player like a Gustav Nyquist.
Which that would be fine, but I wouldn't let Mantha go then.
Yeah, I agree Like, yeah, I would not give Mantha, Nyquist, and a first for.
And then you wouldn't have to worry about dumping salary. So that's something that you could potentially. I mean, I don't know. Do you gun to head right now? First round pick, Gustav Nyquist for Kevin Shattenkirk. Do you do it?
Yeah.
I do it too. I do. And I honestly think they might be able to catch less. You know, I mean, you might be able to do a second round pick and do a Nyquist just because he's a goal scorer, regardless of what Prashant says, because he hates him. I don't know, whatever, but Prashant doesn't think Nyquist is good because he doesn't score on five versus five at even strength. But
going back, the question, if I remember correctly, was fixing defense before we got into the trading of people, right?
But we're getting Shattenkirk. That's fixing the defense.
Sure. But yeah, we want just if I'm going to answer the question from a perspective of not making a trade. Besides the obvious Sid Erickson and play Marchenko, I would severely reduce Cronwall's role in ice time and play Brendan Smith more, especially on the power play.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Brendan Smith is better than Cronwall. So
Jeff, real quick, defend Brendan Smith at the end of the Philly game.
I was actually at the bar.
Yeah, he was drunk.
You've seen what happened, though, right?
I did. Hey, shit happens, man.
It just always happens to him, though.
Well, you know. It's just
gotta happen to somebody.
Exactly.
Might as well happen to the same guy over and over.
There's no such thing as bad publicity.
Yeah, might as well have it over. But yeah, I think that definitely, if there's any name that really needs to be targeted, it needs to be Shattenkirk, even though I think that you might see Shattenkirk moved for Drouin.
Yeah, that trade makes a lot of sense to me. And that's the thing, is like there's a lot of talk about Bufflin and Yandle, but like the prices for them.
Yandle, no. Fuck Yandle.
First of all, Yandle has never proved he's more than a second pairing defenseman, and we have enough of those.
Yandle is Brendan Smith, a Jace.
Bufflin is such Jace, good word. Bufflin is such a tough call there because I think he's good. I think he improves the defense, but the cost of him is going to make it so that he can't be a rental, and I don't know how we guarantee that Bufflin stays. And like I don't know if I want Bufflin around. Like the fact that he's like a grown man who basically drove away a kid because like in such a shitty way too. Like just his attitude, fuck that. I mean, Bufflin can grow.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know. I honestly, I don't know what he's like outside of the whole Kane situation. So it might be a little, you know, there might be a handle on that. So I don't know, but all signs point towards him being kind of a, I don't know, kind of a jag off, and I'm not a big fan of that. So
yeah.
I would not braid my balls for that. All right. JJ so elegantly put. Okay, go ahead.
All right. Lauren asked to be kept out of trade talk, so I'm not going to ask her this. Instead, I'm going to throw the next question first. Tromboner Will wants us to give Ken Holland a score out of 10 since the Calder Cup in 2013, so basically the last 2.5 seasons. In the following categories, let's just go one by one. Coaching, scouting, and front office hires.
Like 10 being the highest here?
Yeah, let's go 10 as highest.
All right. I'm just like, are we doing each one, or are we going to do
sure.
just round it out?
I'll
okay.
say, I'll say 8.
Just call out numbers, yeah. Lauren?
8, I guess. I don't know. There hasn't been too much movement in scouting in front office, I don't think.
I'm going to go ahead and say scouting. I'm not even going to grade him on that because he doesn't do the scouting.
They all work for him. He doesn't do the coaching either.
He made the right call bringing in Jeff Blashill. I don't think we need to.
He did. No, was the right call. So I give him a 10 in that. I give him a 10 in that. Drafting, I give him a 10. They've made the right decisions, I think.
We're not on drafting yet.
Okay, whatever. Then okay.
This is all one thing. Coaching, scouting.
You're taking way too long. Just throw out a number, man.
Shut up. 8.
It's also an 8. Frischweiler drops it down from a 9. Day-to-day roster and salary cap management.
Ooh.
2.
I don't know if I'd go that low.
Okay, 4, because he kept Larkin.
I say 6. And it would be higher if the whole recent thing didn't go down with Drew Miller and all that stuff. Because he's always been pretty decent with that stuff, for the most part.
Yeah, he magicked our way through the 2013-14 season with, like, 17 forwards and a billion injuries. So we know that he's at least somewhat savvy with the cap.
I'm going to go with 5. I think that they tried, like, he tried to do the Alfredson old man bonus carryover thing, but it didn't work, and we ended up with, like, $3 million in bonus overages that essentially wasted cap space. Trades and waivers.
-4.
Yeah, he's awful. One of the worst, I think.
Yeah.
So I would say a 0 for sure.
Especially you throw waivers on there, too. That's just the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Extensions.
4.
Yeah, I would say 5 or... I'd say 5 because I think the Nyquist one was good. The Tatar one was good. Chain one was good. Polkinen. The Yurko one, I like the Yurko one, even though Yurko I'm starting to give up on. That 2-year, I think that's good. Because that might be something you can use in a trade, maybe. But so I give him a 5 on extensions, and obviously the Advocator one brought it down. And yeah.
Ooh, excuse me, that was a hiccup.
Lauren, what do you think?
I'm gonna go with I think a 5 too, because if you are going back that far, you're also including like DeKaiser, Kindle, Erickson.
I don't even remember when Erickson was extended, but I think that it was between then. So yeah,
it was since then because it was since I started really following.
Okay, yeah. Then.
In the new Datsyuk extension. I'm sure there's a couple more, but you go back far enough, and there's definitely more to consider. So there's good and bad.
Datsyuk, the RFAs, Mrazek. I'm gonna give him a 7. I think that Erickson really worked against him. I'm not going to charge Abdicator against him yet because it basically hasn't kicked in yet.
Oh, okay.
And Abdicator is playing well for right now. So there's a lot of wasted space, but mostly as far as extensions, I think I'm more positive on him. UFA signings.
7.
Since 13. I give him a 5. I give him a 5 again because Steven Weiss, that was a disaster. Yeah.
I like Green and I like Richards. But Steven Weiss, no. I like to have Alfredson.
Yeah, you can't really go wrong with Alfredson.
Give him a 6. Give him a 6.
Yeah, 5 or 6 is pretty good, I think.
Wait, does Cleary count as extension or UFA
signing? Yes, that is a UFA signing.
Oh, wait.
Oh, shit. 0, 0, 0.
11.
No.
You should give him... I figured that... He extended Brendan Smith, so I figured that he'd be getting like a 52 from, or 52, but a, I don't know.
He didn't give him a no-trade clause. So.
A 100 emoji.
Give him a cool. Number 2.
Drafting?
I think I always will give him, you know, a solid 9 or something in drafting, because he's done a really good job with drafting, I think. Last year, 2015, I really like Svechnikov a lot, but I still think that there might have been a player that, like a Konechny. I think Konechny's going to be a stud. Not saying that Svechnikov won't be, but I don't know. I would have leaped out of my seat at the draft if he would have taken Konechny. So, but yeah, I still give him like a 9, or, you know, easily, just because he's done a lot of good ones. And the reason why I don't say 10 is because I'm kind of altering it with the trade for Turgeon. Even though he's doing really well in the WHL this year, I want to see that kid like come into the AHL and just be a badass. So
time's gonna tell there. I give him a 71.
Hey,
I'll give him a 7+1, which is an 8.
At this stage, would you rather keep Quincy for the playoffs or trade him at the deadline for a third or fourth rounder?
Sure. Trade him
now. Let's see. Team kick or death. I'm not going to answer all four of these, but if Pronger could be traded, is there any hope to see Erickson shipped out?
I mean, hope is not a strategy, but it's possible.
Those aren't comparable contracts, though.
Yeah, no. That's because
Pronger is never going to play hockey professionally ever again, and his contract doesn't count towards anyone's salary cap anyway.
It's not existent money.
It's dead space that the Coyotes are using to get to the floor. It's a brilliant cap management by a team because they're paying him like $500,000, but they've got like a $5 million cap or $5.5 million cap hit for him, and that's essentially what counts the salary floor. So it worked out. Erickson's not going to do that unless he suffers a career-ending injury. Let's see. With the exception of E and possibly Abby, who should we be on the lookout for as a bad contract? So you can't count the biggest, baddest contract we've got.
Like it's the cheating. Next person to get a bad contract. Is that what they're asking?
Yeah.
Luke Glendening.
Oh yeah.
Brendan Smith.
No, I think this is either. I think it's going to be Brendan Smith. Put up or shut up. He's either going to turn into what he's been so far this season, a really good defenseman, and stick out long term, or he's going to fizzle out like we've been waiting for. Oops.
I'll say we might have a bad contract on our hands, and I don't want to say it just yet. But if Mike Green doesn't start scoring a little bit more, that's a $6 million cap hit that's like just kind of meh right now.
True. Yeah. I guess it's because the term's so short, it doesn't really bother me.
Yeah, it's still 3 years, but
I think but the thing is that, and my argument there is that in 3 years, the look of this team is going to be either that contract will have worked out really well, or it doesn't matter because we will be entering rebuild. So I don't really count it.
Yeah, and I'm not going to count any of the pre-2012 contracts, like Zetterberg or Cronwall, because those were signed under a different CBA, and they basically changed the rules in our faces for that. And there's just nothing you can do about that. How okay are you with Red Wing management unloading any non-key veterans they can in order to give serious playing time to the almost-ready prospects in Grand Rapids, even if they're conceding that they're not winning the Cup this year? Basically, should we go more aggressively to the rebuild on the fly mode and put the playoff streak in jeopardy?
I don't think they're in a position to do that right now, given where they're at in the standings.
I mean, who are we talking about? Helm?
Yeah, I mean, Helm is
Miller.
Helm is fine. Miller is going to get a 2-year contract this summer.
I mean, who counts as a non-key? Everybody's a non-key veteran right now, right? I mean,
yeah. I mean,
obviously, Datsuk and Zetterberg are the standard. So yeah, you don't. I think we got to keep them out of the conversation. But
right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hell, by now, Gustav Nyquist is a veteran.
Right. So it's Tatar.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not giving, like I said, I would only give up one of those guys, and it would be Nyquist for a defenseman that possibly puts you over the top. So
yeah, right now I don't think we've got a forward that's as good as that even projects to be as other than Mantha, I guess, but I'm kind of okay with Mantha still being in Grand Rapids, but like, that's pretty much the only one where we're looking as like, he could be better than Nyquist. I don't think Bertuzzi's like that.
Yeah, no. I don't know. I think
see, but that's a center, so I don't want to specifically move him.
Well, I mean, technically, Joakim Andersson is a veteran, so
yeah, we should get rid of him on principle.
Yeah, you could get rid of him and move up Ethan to see.
I mean, you could get rid of him, and you don't even have to replace him, and be fine with it.
Yeah,
get rid of Cheyenne. All right, you're fighting the final space battle against the dark or the light side, whichever side you want to be on, doesn't matter. And you can only have five crew members by your side. Which five Red Wings prospects or coaches? Which five Red Wings prospects or coaches do you recruit for your crew and why?
Larkin.
Yeah, you know Larkin. He's fast.
Because he's Larkin.
Datsuk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quietly old vet.
Yep. Number two. I don't know if I take any of the defensemen right now.
I might take Erickson because he is big.
See, it's a space battle. Like, it's not like
Chewbacca's big.
You're not fucking wrestling. It's a space battle.
Chewbacca's big?
Yeah, but he has that crossbow, and it's badass.
Erickson has the cross check.
Okay.
Fine, take Erickson. That's three.
You serious, Jeff?
Fine,
I'm going to take Brendan Smith because if you're doing this and it's a final battle, somebody's got to die, and that's going to be Brendan Smith. He's the happy-go-lucky, like, yay, I'm having fun, I'm helping, and then he gets blown the hell up. That's Brendan Smith.
I hate this question. I'm done.
Teemu Pulkkinen's got a cannon, so take him. And let's see, we need one more.
Because he's got, I don't know, he's our head coach. I'm just going to take Def Lash. I'll shut up.
Yeah, he's the old grizzled. Yeah,
guy.
Whatever.
He's not old and he's grizzled.
Next question. Operator Z wants us to fire Pat Frischweiler. Yes, we agree.
Yeah.
Let's see. Seemingly every... lurking off. I like this username. Seemingly every year, late January, February, seem to produce the optimal conditions for the injury bug to hit. This got me thinking, at this point of the season, how would you rank these players in terms of who we can afford to lose the least to a one-month injury? Mrazek, Larkin, Datsyuk, Zetterberger, DeKaiser. So who is the most important of those five?
Mrazek.
Mrazek is numero uno.
Yeah, it's got to be.
When he went down last night, I was like, over. We're done. This season's done with. Because I honestly thought that he was down with like a concussion. I was like, shit.
I thought you're a sucker, Kyle. He was faking it.
Definitely faking it. I mean, he took a butt to the head and just that back. And I was like, okay. But he went down.
Veteran.
Mm-hmm. He is pretty good at that kind of stuff.
If you're a goalie, you need to be. So
I know, but he has shown already that he's pretty.
Just a side note to that. Do you guys feel like maybe I know like the looming concern is that Mrazek is putting up some really ridiculous numbers right now, and it's not really sustainable. Maybe he is a guy that could sustain those numbers. What do you think?
I'd give it just as good a chance as anything.
I think so too.
Okay, so next up, out of the four remaining, Larkin, Datsyuk, Zetterberg, or DeKaiser?
Larkin.
I say Datsyuk.
I think it's Datsyuk, yeah.
Yeah, Datsyuk. He pretty much turned the team around when he came back.
I put Datsyuk third.
That's fair.
Okay, let's just save to the end and admit to ourselves that Zetterberg is the one who is coming up last in that pile.
Yeah. He's on the box for sure.
Doesn't he still lead us in points, or is that still Larkin?
I think it's Larkin.
It's tied.
It's tied. Larkin, okay. And Zetterberg. Yep.
Yeah, that's the guy we're like, we're okay with him going out for a month.
Which is crazy, but
he just like quietly puts up points.
Yeah.
Holmstrom 96 wants to play the keep, trade, lose for nothing game.
Ooh, I got this one.
I'd rather not.
No, we got to do this.
That's right now.
The veteran core. We got Zetterberg, Datsyuk, and Cronwall. You got to keep one. You got to trade one.
I'll go first.
For nothing. Jeff is going first.
I would keep Zetterberg because you need him in the dressing room moving forward as a leader to set the example for the kids. I would trade Datsyuk because he's going to retire in a year or two anyway, and he's probably got the highest value that you can get anything back from. And then I would lose Cronwall for nothing.
I think he's coming back on a one-year deal.
Well, this is my opinion.
I know.
Trade, lose for nothing, not yours. So when it's your turn, you can speak your mind.
Yeah, Kyle.
Fuck you, Jeff.
And I, like I said, I lose Cronwall for nothing because fuck him. He's falling off a cliff.
All right, Kyle.
Lose in a trade or lose like for nothing. I'll go with Cronwall. What were the others? I'm sorry.
If you weren't interrupting me, you would know this.
You got to keep and trade one of or Datsyuk and Zetterberg.
All right, I'm right there with you, Jeff.
Okay, so you're keeping Z and you're trading Datsyuk.
Yeah, I just wanted to mess with Jeff, and he just wanted to be.
Plus, if you trade Zetterberg, cap recapture, and you're just gonna F yourself in the long run.
All right, Lauren.
I hate this question. First of all, well, I feel like let's see. You're already going to, I mean, we're probably going to lose Datsyuk, you know, the next couple seasons. I don't know. Let's see. Might have to come back to me on this one.
What's the right answer, JJ?
Jeff had the right answer. All right, back to
you.
So did I.
Back to me. thank you. Yeah, I guess I'll just agree with you guys. I don't want to think too hard about this one. It makes me sad.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. Which Mel Brooks movie is your favorite and why? I'm going to make you start with this, Jeff, because I'm not sure you've ever seen a Mel Brooks movie.
Hold on, I'm about to Google that.
Okay, go ahead, Kyle.
Wait, is the Robin Hood one?
Yeah, Robin Hood. I would say it's a tie. One. Mine's a tie between Spaceballs and Young Frankenstein.
It's Frankenstein.
Okay.
Good answer. Lauren?
Those might have been the only couple of movies of his that I've seen, so I'm going to go with Spaceballs.
I can't believe nobody has said Blazing Saddles yet.
It's because you didn't get to me.
I don't want you to talk.
Yeah, you don't want anybody to talk ever.
Go ahead.
JJ. No, it is Spaceballs, and it's because it's overall the funniest. But Blazing Saddles, I think it's a lot of consideration for how amazing it is and how you could remake Spaceballs nowadays with no problem. You could not make Blazing Saddles nowadays. If you tried to make that movie, you would get boycotted out the ass for it. So, yeah, let's put that in its own special, amazing, fantastic category.
What about Little Rascals? Just kidding.
Next question.
Let's see. There's Erickson Smith, the only two that stand. No, that's not a question. Shut up. Bring up Ouellette. Why hasn't he been called up? Why hasn't Ouellette been called up?
Why would we call him up?
Not as
he can't
good
even
as
find room
here
to play Marchenko. So, yeah.
Why? I mean, yeah, Marchenko. Yeah. Nope. I don't know. Quick answer.
Who's the realistic trade partner for Howard?
Now it's not Edmonton, which that was number one for me, because they just signed Cam Talbot to a 3-year deal, which is north of $4 million per, which is okay.
Thanks for that, jerk-offs.
Yeah, I say it's probably Calgary. They've got two free agent goalies. It's got to be Calgary, I think.
Yeah.
Howard.
Because they keep screwing up.
Howard for Hoodler.
Ooh.
Yeah, see?
What's up?
1-year deal. He's got 1 year left.
Now we're talking.
Don't forget the stairs, buddy.
Don't forget the stairs, buddy. Can we get that as like a sound drop, please?
Apparently not.
Don't forget the stairs, buddy.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. Calgary. Carolina, maybe?
I was thinking Carolina.
Carolina, yeah.
Yeah.
Aren't they out of Cam Ward's contract soon?
Who's Buffalo's goalie of the future?
Leonard. We traded the first to him.
Leonard.
Yeah, okay. We're not going to trade him with Buffalo then.
No.
Toronto.
Leonard isn't a number one goalie.
Yeah, because Babcock is going to want Howard.
Yeah, the other teams listed in this question are...
they don't need goalie.
Colorado, Columbus, first of all, both have...
Yeah, Varlamov and Bobrovsky.
Dallas has two goalies.
Vancouver's got Miller.
Everybody's got two goalies, Jeff.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they have, like, two.
You know what, guys? And I think this would be great. What if we traded Howard to Dallas and they won a Stanley Cup with him?
Sure. I would love that. I would.
Because nobody could be mad.
Every minute of that.
No one would be mad. And I would love to.
They're not going to win the Stanley Cup because of Howard.
I'd be mad.
I'd be mad because he never did it for us, but whatever. Right. That's a whole other can of worms to open up.
Red Wings 26-13-5. Says, can't think of a better question. I'm going to steal one from Whose Line. Things you can say about the Red Wings, but not your girlfriend.
What?
Things you can say about the Red Wings, but not your girlfriend. And there's a few. Let's see. Jay Stone says the Wings routinely give it up during the third period. You can say that about the Red Wings, but not your girlfriend. T and Kicker Death says when you choke at the end, it makes me wish I hadn't watched. The zone entries have been great lately. Their stick handling has been abysmal. They play soft in the O zone. Too many men has been a problem this year. That's a really good answer. Really wish she. Yeah, that's a dumb one. Oh my God. When will this awful period be over? That's one.
Not much on the back end.
There we go. No more.
Showed him the 5-hole and took it away.
The readers kind of kicked their ass on this one.
No. They had time to think about it.
Yeah.
Plus, I don't have a girlfriend, so.
Yeah, like things I can say about the Red Wings, but not your girlfriend would be. I love you. because I have a wife. And I'm not allowed to have a girlfriend. That's kind of in the contract. So that's cheating, though. Okay. Like on the question, that's not. Never mind. It's a dumb question. Shut up,
Frank. I thought it was funny.
Yeah,
we're just horrible at it.
No, I mean, the reader answers are really good, so let's get them all on.
They win this round.
Let's see. How realistic is it to think the Wings will close out the season in one of the top three divisional spots?
It's decently realistic.
Top three? Yeah, sure.
They Florida's going to fall off. Tampa will win the division, and the Wings will be there in the 2-3 spot playing Boston.
Oh, shit.
Great. That's what we need. Because I think Boston...
That's still a team I don't like.
No, I hate playing them because they're a good team. Like, they're still a very good team, and I know that we don't have a center like Patrice Bergeron. So,
well, I think it's just it's not even just that they're a good team. It's just their style, I think, matches up a way where, I mean, we saw even just a couple years ago and just in the regular season, we don't have counters for what they have. It's just not a good matchup in our favor.
Yeah, I don't know. I think
Jeff knows all about that one because he's a Bruins fan. So,
yes.
12th Cup Detroit wants to know in a woefully unwrecked comment, don't you wonder sometimes about sound and vision?
Like the vision? Like vision from Marvel?
Yeah, see, that's why he doesn't have enough recs, because people don't get that. That's a David Bowie reference, by the way.
I don't know David Bowie.
Yeah, that one went right over my head, so...
Everyone was sad last week, and I was kind of
I didn't catch it first. Bill H. wants to know, he's got a pretty good write-up about the Corsi numbers on the defense and everything, but he says, would you say our poor D is a cause of our inability to generate offense?
Absolutely. It's definitely a culprit of that, because they don't have... I don't know. It's just... They don't have that guy that you can... You know, they don't have, like, and, you know, this is a poor comparison because a lot of teams don't have that, but, like, an Erik Karlsson, obviously, who just drives all offense eternally for the Senators. But, yeah, I think that they, if they were to have a player like, you know, like Cronwall, you know, a while ago, or, you know, a Shattenkirk or a Byfuglien or, you know, any of those kinds of players that could play top pair minutes, play in all situations, that makes a huge difference. You know, we wanted Green to be that, but I don't know if he's going to be the kind of guy that changes it all. And I don't know if he ever was going to be that kind of a guy. I think definitely the best offense is good defense, right, guys?
Yeah.
Same shit.
The best offense is a good offense.
Yeah. Just look at the Stars, even though they're kind of bottoming out right now.
App State wants to know, what the fuck, man?
Fucking A, right?
Just going for a rip, bud.
Yeah, my answer is if I wanted a lip from you, I'd scrape it off my zipper. Immortal Lidstrom says, assuming the Wings stay healthy, will Athanasiu play again on the Red Wings this year?
No.
No.
No. Lauren, you want to say no too?
No.
All right, thank you.
Wait, you want to say no or you don't want to say no?
Yes, correct. I don't know.
Okay, thanks.
Good answer.
You're welcome.
Nazaro 33 says, judging from the comments, you would mistake that the Red Wings are in the midst of a 10-game losing streak. I'll kick in on that real quick. No, it would be so much worse if the Red Wings were on a 10-game losing streak. Imagine the shit show our comments would be if the Red Wings had lost 10 in a row? We lose, like, 3 in a row, and I want to just burn down the entire internet because of the awful shit that gets said. If they lose 10 in a row, man, you guys won't survive that. At any rate, judging from the past dozen games, do you think the Red Wings are trending upward or down?
They're just trending, like a straight line.
Holding steady.
That wouldn't be trending.
Standing pat was an option, but I just didn't want to give that to you guys because I knew you would use it. It's a cop out.
Fine. They're trending upward, but it's like very slightly.
I think they're trending downward.
Well, I mean, you have to have them trend downwards so the expectations aren't too high. So they eventually do trend upward.
That's fair, yeah.
I think they are trending upward. I agree with Jeff, trending upward slightly, but I think they're on they're in a dangerous area where, you know, one thing could kind of just derail it like that.
Yeah, I think they've been on a lot.
I don't know if you could hear my finger snap there, but
I did hear it. It was
that was good.
Very good. I think they've been trending downward lately. They've been winning games, but they've been doing it the kind of the wrong way. But also, it's a factor of, like, if we're just looking at the last dozen games, they were playing really well right before that. So trending downward from that is not necessarily a bad thing. But it's something that I'm glad they've been able to win games while they've, well, it looks like they've been working through that. Hopefully they can start going back up real soon. And then the very last, Jonas Steffes, who constantly comes in with these interesting trade proposals. And I'm just going to read it. Shahan, Helm, Quincy pick, and another Nestriasel-type prospect for Shaten Kirk.
Yes.
I mean, would I do that? Yeah. Would the Blues? No.
Do we even have another Nestriasel-type prospect?
Louis Mark Aubrey. I don't know.
No sick.
No, because he won't be in the NHL at any point.
Well, it didn't look like Nestriasel was going to be in the NHL either, but...
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yep.
That's goofy looking.
Nestriasel? Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Like Dewey from Malcolm in the Middle grew up.
Yes, I do that. If St. Louis said, hey, we want this and this and this, and you can have this, and that was... It matched up with that. Yeah, you do that like 100 times out of 100. Easy.
It's like...
RFA,
UFA, UFA, draft pick, and rando nobody for a top four defenseman. Yes, everybody would take a good player for spare parts.
It'll never
And I know happen. It hurts calling Shannon and Helm spare parts, but that's basically what they are at this point.
It doesn't hurt me to say that.
So from a standpoint, yes, we should trade all of our decent to bad players for good players.
Because that's how it works.
Yes.
Yeah.
For
and I'm sorry, I know that's super, super dickish, but that's basically like 75% of trade proposals that I see are, here's this random collection of quantity that's got to even up to quality over the time, and it's just not how NHL trades work.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That does it for questions, so I'm going to kick this right back to Jeff to segue us the hell out of here.
Great, we're going to put a bow on this podcast. We're going to look at the week ahead really quick. I'm going to give you the schedule. You're going to tell me how they're going to do, and then we're going to get out of here. Home against the Blues, at Buffalo, home against the Ducks, at New York. Four games before we record again in the next week. JJ, what's a record?
Oh, shit. Which New York team is that?
The Islanders. Sorry. Brooklyn.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, we're going to lose that game. I'm going to say that we... beat the Blues in a one-goal game, surprisingly enough. I'm going to say we lose to Buffalo, and then we come back, and we at least get to overtime on Saturday. And then I'm going to change my mind. We're going to beat New York. So what is that, 5 points at eight?
It's optimistic.
I say we go 500 in terms of points. We get four.
Lauren?
Let's see. St. Louis, Buffalo, Anaheim, Islanders, you said, right?
Yep.
Okay. You know, I just said we're trending up. I think we're trending upward, but I'm actually not too optimistic about this stretch. I'll go 2-1-1 again. I made that prediction last time, I think. So I'm going to go with 2-1-1. I think we beat St. Louis and the Islanders. I think we lose to Anaheim and shootout. Why not for Buffalo?
All right,
because it's a division rival and, you know, 3-point games and all that.
The correct answer is 1-3. You lose to St. Louis, you lose to Buffalo, you beat Anaheim because fuck them, and you lose to the Islanders. Do you guys have any final hockey-related thoughts?
Dylan Larkin should win the Calder Trophy.
Yeah, it's not even close.
Yep.
Yes, Panarin, I don't want
a joke.
He's too old.
Who, Larkin?
Yeah.
No.
No, Panarin.
I know.
So wait a second.
I like Second City Hockey's argument that, like, oh, Panarin is a much more well-rounded player than Dylan Larkin is. And Dylan Larkin isn't, like, the two-way player that Panarin is. Like, well, no shit, Sherlock. When Dylan Larkin was born, Panarin was in kindergarten. He's supposed to be a better player. He's got 5 fucking years on the field. He's an old man. He shouldn't win it. And if you got a problem with that, take it up with Jimmy Howard and the Calder he should have won, except for he was too old. So, kiss my ass.
Amen.
All you Chicago fans that are listening.
For Lauren and Kyle and JJ, I'm Jeff. Wayne and Motown Radio. See you next week, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Winging it. I'm in Motown.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.